Sometimes to truly make a change, you have to do something big, something dramatic, and something that ensures that you never go back to the emotional and physical traps that have made you so unhappy. One of the best days of my life was the day I smashed my scale. I loved it so much, I think we should all do it. And to make rejecting diet culture even more exciting, I'm giving away free advice and prizes, including a full year of body kindness coaching with me. So to join, visit bodykindnessbook.com/BK Scale Smash. That's bodykindnessbook.com/BK Scale Smash. There you give your name and email and you'll get the motivational coaching from me. Lots of ideas for how you can participate right there on the page. And I look forward to joining you all summer long while we work together to just tell the world that we don't need scales. We don't need judgment. We don't need criticism. What we need is body kindness. Thank you so much for tuning in to Body Kindness. I am very excited to bring you this episode in which, for the first time, I talk with a fellow male dietitian, which is a rare breed anyway, a good friend of mine, just a really good person, Aaron Flores. And we start to unravel the male perspective of body image. And it's a very interesting conversation. And from my standpoint, I really think that I'm just beginning to scratch the surface with this topic area. I've had a number of men email me actually asking to be on the show. And I get listener feedback all the time. People love connecting with Bernie. They loved season one where I was kind of helping him find a better place in life. And they love our check-ins. So I'm very, very proud about how I am able to, on a pretty consistent basis, bring in a male perspective. But what we haven't really discussed is men and body image. And I really hope to bring more shows like this. So if you know any male experts, or not even experts, just any men with an opinion on this topic, I'd love to get that recommendation. You can email me, Rebecca@bodykindnessbook.com. Again, Rebecca@bodykindnessbook.com. And just a little teaser for how this show is going to go today. So Aaron and I talk, for the most part, about men and body image and kind of the history behind it, why he thinks it is a challenging and difficult topic. I bring up the dad bod, which is this interesting term that came out, which compared to women is definitely more forgiving than the female criteria. But it's very much still grounded in weight bias. So the person who was credited for coining the term of a dad bod was interviewed for Slate, and I included the link in the show notes. And she says, a dad bod is a guy who's not incredibly chiseled, but at the same time is not unhealthy. He's not overweight. So right there, I say, okay, you're trying to say overweight means unhealthy. That's wrong. He's probably that guy who played football in high school and came to college and didn't play football. Maybe he had a few too many slices of pizza or a few too many ramens and just ended up with a little bit of squish on the top of his muscle. Anyway, squish on top of muscle would be pretty normal, and some have more squish than others. Then she says it's a healthy body. So she is presenting an ideal there. She says it's a boy next door look. He's the kind of person you go on a hike with, and then at the end of the day, you eat pasta and lay in bed and watch a movie. Now, look, that sounds awesome, but that there's not an ideal for that. And we know what happens to the guys who don't fit that dad bod criteria. And then also in the show notes, and like I said, Aaron and I really just begin to scratch the surface of this, but I'm going to share a link on the Bradley University website that compares male versus female body image. And it goes into how they're similar and how they're different. And one thing I wanted to bring up is that, which we do touch on in the podcast, that men tend to be quieter about their body negativity, seeking treatment less frequently or holding off on treatment longer than women due to shame, which then brought us to conversations around vulnerability, and in particular vulnerability and how we're raising our kids. So in the show notes, I also share the link to Brené Brown's TEDx talk on the power of vulnerability. So you can check that out again, because I'm sure you've listened to it. And really just understand understanding why we should really care about male body image. And there's a study cited at the Bradley website that over 90% of men struggle in some way with body dissatisfaction and negative affect. These are negative opinions of themselves, or negative emotions and thoughts toward their body. So that was a 2014 study. And again, I've got this information and much more in the show notes, but that just is an alarming and unacceptable statistic. You know, we have to care about all human beings, men and women. This is not us versus them. We really have to shine a light on body image issues, because I think that while it is true men are the dominant culture, the dominant viewpoint of the culture, and they hold more of the power, but if men are suffering in silence, then they aren't really that powerful. And we need the power of all men to help liberate everybody from the oppressive diet culture, which is making us struggle with these body image issues. And we do talk about it in the podcast, but just to reiterate it here, I'm talking everyone, parents, people without children. We all have a role in raising the next generation and working together. And no matter the size of your child's body, it's not enough to just teach kids in large bodies how to deal with our world. We have to do that because they have to learn how to thrive in our world. But we can also teach kids in all size bodies, including that ideal thin conforming body, not to be a perpetrator of bullying or body shaming the other kids. And so, you know, Aaron and I do get into a conversation in the second part of the podcast about our families and how we're raising our kids. And Aaron shares what he is doing with his kids and basically eliminating body talk in the house. So I really hope you enjoy the conversation, and definitely check out all the links in the show notes. Check out Aaron. He also has a podcast, Dietitians Unplugged. I've been a guest there. It's a great podcast where he talks with another female dietitian, Glenys Oyston, and they discuss just everything about the intersections of health at every size and dietetics, which I find very interesting. So I hope you enjoy our show, and I'll pick you up on the backside with some more advice on how we can continue through a healthy and happy summer together. Because real health is about being good to yourself. It's time for Body Kindness, the place where all bodies fit and weight is just a number. Hi, I'm Rebecca Scritchfield, author of the book Body Kindness, registered dietitian, nutritionist, and host of this podcast. My topic today is body image for guys. And this topic is important to Body Kindness because, for the most part, the conversation around body image centers around women. But the reality is that guys have their own rules for what it means to be labeled as beautiful or healthy, and they aren't immune to the oppression of diet culture. My special guest to discuss this today is Erin Flores. Erin is a registered dietitian nutritionist based out of Los Angeles, California. With nearly 10 years of experience, Erin has worked with eating disorders in a variety of settings. A large part of his career was spent working at the VA, Greater Los Angeles Healthcare System, where he helped develop and launch one of the first binge eating disorder programs to help veterans struggling with the disorder. Since leaving the VA, Erin has continued to work in the eating disorder community, helping run groups and providing individual counseling to adolescents and adults. He currently works part-time at Center for Discovery and part-time in his private practice in Calabasas, California. His main areas of focus are intuitive eating and health at every size, and in his work, Erin helps individuals learn how to make peace with food and develop body-positive behaviors. Erin's work has been featured during Weight Stigma Awareness Week and blogs for National Eating Disorder Information Center, and he was the closing keynote speaker at the 2016 Binge Eating Disorder Awareness Annual Conference. Along with his work with eating disorders, he also is the co-host of the wonderful podcast, Dietitians Unplugged. Erin, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Rebecca. I'm so happy to be talking to you.
Yeah. So why don't we just fill the listeners in with what you've been working on, what you currently have up your sleeve?
Yeah, it's been a really busy year. I feel like this is especially calendar year, right? 2017 has been sort of my year to refocus some of my own learning. And I came to Health at Every Size and intuitive eating, I don't know, probably like 5 years ago, maybe a little bit more, plus or minus a year. And since then, there's been, I think, at least from my perspective, and you can give me your own thoughts, but I think from my perspective as a dietitian, is there's sort of been an explosion in our community about over this topic. And I think that the learning has sort of exponentially increased. So I'm doing a lot of learning, especially this year. I'm a part of the Body Trust certification course from Beam Nourished, in which is a duo out in Portland, Oregon. And it's a 6-month program, and it really looks at body image. It looks at body image work, and not just helping our clients, but also helping ourselves. And they frame it in a social justice, a feminist perspective. And it, to me, that is very important when I look at all the things that I sort of am coalescing from intuitive eating and Health at Every Size. Mm-hmm. And I've been learning a lot, especially over the past few months, as I have started this training.
Yeah, no, I think Be Nourished is great, and their work is really important. Like, I think they're one of the good crew that, you know, genuinely wants to help eradicate diet culture, and that is actively working and leading a path that sees our annihilation of diet culture really being about not just self-acceptance, but working to move our whole cultural viewpoint away from thin is healthy, thin is ideal, thin is what's valuable, you know, to size diversity is a real thing. But then even beyond that, right, and sort of the intersectionality of it all, to say that no matter where you are as a person, you can work to change the system. So it's kind of like another level outside of what we might do as individual dietitians in our work. But it's this viewpoint of how our work can also actually change the way the whole system works.
Absolutely. And I think it puts the notion of how we see bodies and weight with under the lens of, you said it earlier, oppression, and under the lens of any other social justice movement, and understanding, like you said, the intersectionality, that someone who's in a larger body is not just dealing with the oppression from that, but they could be dealing with other forms of oppression, whether it's through race, gender, socioeconomic status, any of those other things. And it's important that we can't just silo the body part. We need to look at all of it to really help people heal. So it's been really transformative already, because one of the things as a dietitian we're taught is how to fix the problem. And this is sort of coming at it from a little bit perspective, where helping, especially on an individual basis, helping clients, really just partnering with them to see the problem and empowering them to make the changes that they need to make to feel more embodied. So it puts a little bit different twist on being a dietitian. I mean, I'm really learning some new things about how to hold space in my office.
Mm-hmm. And finally get excited about our careers again.
Totally. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a great way of putting it, because my previous career, I was a video game developer, and that quickly, the novelty of it quickly wore off. So it took me around 8 or 9 years to sort of transition out of that into becoming a dietitian. And so I'm coming up on, you know, almost 10 years. And you're totally right. Like, this is like, I am rejuvenated. I'm ready to like dive deeper into this work. My previous career, it was not like that at all.
Yeah. And it's good. It's good to be energized by your work and to feel like you can contribute something of value. I mean, I do believe that most people are operating from this type of belief that they want to leave the world a better place than when they inherited it, you know, and that can be done in so many ways, through parenting and your job and all this other stuff. You know, but certainly, I mean, when people become registered dietitians, you know, I think the intention is to help people, but so often what our curriculum shows us focus on weight loss and actually body oppression and fueling eating disorders. Like, so we're trained, and actually it's part of the problem. And like how you were talking about the explosion. I mean, I would say culturally, I've seen mainstream pick up body positivity, which is great. I haven't seen our profession keep trend with that. So I don't see a lot coming out from, I would say, the programs that teach future dietitians or specific dietetic internships, or even like what comes out of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, don't necessarily see them dealing with health at every size, body image, or anything like that. It literally comes from dietitians themselves who are putting out programs and trainings and speaking. It's like we're needing to create the shift because it's not being done for us in the medical model, in that system where dietitians typically reside.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that.
Yeah. So thank you for all the wonderful work that you're doing. And, you know, yeah, let's just, I'm so excited to talk to you about guys and body image, you know, because the first picture that's coming to mind, and it's a cultural thing, right? But it's like, you know, like the dad bod, right? You know, and, you know, like I remember that term kind of coming out sometime last year, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is totally get your beach body ready. That's typically directed at women, but for men. And, you know, I have to say, I see majority of women as clients, but I have a fair share of male clients too. And it really is an important issue to bring to light that men can absolutely, there is an ideal for men, and they can absolutely struggle with body image. It just might be that we don't hear about it as much. So what's kind of your take on men and body image?
Yeah, I think that what I'm seeing is that we're behind the curve than what women are experiencing with in terms of their body. And I think, and what I mean by that is, I think the body image movement for men is probably 10 or 15 years behind where women are right now. So if you go online and you were to sort of either Google fat activist or body positivity or body acceptance, a majority of the responses that would come back would probably be blogs or fashion sites or Instagram feeds that are probably run by women. And there's not a lot of male voices in that space right now. And I think there's more sort of entering, but I think it's there's just not as many. And I think that's for a couple reasons. One is, I think inherently the focus of weight and bodies is patriarchal. And what I mean by that, it's oppression focused more at women's bodies than at men's. And so this is why I think there is so much feminist sort of approaches dealing with body image. So I think that's part of the reason, right? A large part of the messages around bodies and the thin ideal focus so much on women and its oppression of women's bodies. The male perspective, from my own experience, is it's less openly discussed. The pressure to fit into a specific body type or to have a specific body type is very subtly given to us. And it's given to us in a lot of the same ways through media and things like that. But the discussion that men are having with men, at least again, in my own experience, is not as much about, I got to get, you know, ripped or whatever. It's very subtle. It's very underlying. It's like, oh, I just need to go to the gym. Like I'm not, you know, going to the gym as much. I'm not lifting as much. How do I lift more? And maybe privately we're all focused on getting the six pack or building muscle or trying to, you know, change our body size to a smaller body type. So I just don't think that there are many men who are discussing it with other men. And so it leaves it in the shadows a little bit. It leaves it in the dark. It leaves it to be very isolating. So when men are struggling with body image, I don't know if they know how to even look for resources to help them, because I don't even know that they realize it's a struggle. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, do they even know that they're dealing with a body image issue? Like they might not even be aware of that.
Right. And so, you know, because again, they might, it might be framed as I'm just not working out enough, or I need to lose weight according to what the doctor says so that my cholesterol goes down. Or I don't know how much of it gets framed as you will not be successful in this society unless you are a certain body type, which I think is much more of a female narrative, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. You know, I think so. And with the dad bod thing, I think that was such an interesting, that was like a couple years ago now, right?
I think so.
So as I think about it now, I mean, the dad bod was sort of, you know, it wasn't the dad bod who that was like, you know, Hugh Jackman, mm-hmm. every ab was totally visible. It was sort of like, you know, Adam Sandler, you know, mm-hmm. like, hey, it's like there's some pecs, but there's, you know, there's also a little bit of a belly and it's not perfectly muscular. There's a little bit of rolls there and that's totally okay. He has a dad bod. I think this is where male privilege is exercised in spades. And what I mean by that is I don't know if there would be that conversation around women's bodies. I think the male privilege is we're allowed to have a little bit of extra fat as we get older. We're allowed to age in a way where our bodies get to expand a little bit and it's acceptable. And that's the male privilege part that I think men need to acknowledge that we are getting this message in a very different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, for women, it's like, I'm imagining like after having a kid, right? Like, oh, body bounce back, you know, in 6 weeks right. or however, you know, like that's, you know, there isn't, at least it didn't go viral, you know, this idea of a mom bod parallel to that. It's like, here's a baby the size of watermelon out of my vagina or C-section, whatever. And, oh, well, you need to bounce back like a rubber band. And yeah, I definitely think it is more outwardly. But, you know, I mean, you had mentioned that the sort of washboard abs. I mean, I see those images, you know, in a magazine about men and health. And it's appearance everywhere, or even today's diet in disguise, keto, paleo, Whole 30. I see a lot of men latching on to these things, calling it health or thinking it's health. And it's not, you know, I mean, it's certainly not science-based that these things are going to help you improve your health and well-being. So I think it harms in a couple ways. I think that it harms because they may struggle with things that they're not aware of that are difficult, and it's going to impact other areas of your life. That's just the way life works. So it's going to impact other things you care about, what you do in your free time, time with family, your own self-confidence, how you interact with other people. And then also, I think it also contributes to keeping women oppressed because, you know, then if men are okay with working on this thing and this and that, then as the power, they kind of keep the oppression going because they could be part of the liberation. But instead, if they're stuck, you know, working on their stuff and not seeing the light, it also keeps women stuck too.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I think you're right. I mean, listen, I think there is that pressure, right? And if you go to the market, you see Men's Fitness magazine and you see the washboard abs and you see a lot of headlines about how to do it with very minimal effort, right? And I think the interesting thing is that, you know, along with all this is that I would venture to say that it enables the secretive nature of especially disordered eating and eating and eating disorders for men under a veil as well. And so, you know, when I think about, you know, is someone getting up every day at 5 a.m. to exercise 7 days a week? And are they being obsessive about every nutrient that they take in their body? Regardless of gender, right? I think that could lead to some negative consequences. That could be depending on the results. I mean, there could be some disordered eating habits in there. And with men, I think it's sort of like, oh no, you're just doing something healthy. You know, you're just building muscle and that's okay. But, you know, if there's anxiety because you missed your gym day and then there's compensation for that, that becomes a problem for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, because it's you're now having to deal with the anxiety that's going to affect other places of your life, or, you know, you're going to be beating yourself up because you are, you know, it's not just a human, okay, you know, you win some, you lose some, we'll, you know, we'll work out tomorrow or another day. You know, it's, it becomes a set of rules that no one can really live up to that idea of perfection. And then, you know, there's less self-compassion because you beat yourself up about it, and it's gonna affect your own well-being. And it's also gonna affect, you know, I think the goodness that you are able to bring to the world. I think there's even a stigma against men even being able to talk about body insecurities. And I'm calling to mind like Brené Brown, who talks about characteristics of men, that says that men are valuable the same way for women. Like, we're supposed to be nice and have a good appearance. For men, you're supposed to show power and you're not allowed to be vulnerable. So you're not allowed to have a problem. You are the problem solver. So, I mean, why would any male own up to this or seek any type of help or support if what is determining their value and their worth is not having any problems in the first place, you know?
Absolutely. And that's why anytime I get a call from a male client to talk about these things and to make an appointment with me, I really try to say, like, this is a courageous thing you're doing. This is a brave thing that you're doing to be vulnerable. And I think you're absolutely right. There, we are not sort of trained as men how to be vulnerable and how to share, you know, difficult emotions with friends or with family. And, you know, I will firsthand experience, like, it's hard for me, and I don't have a lot of very close male friends that I can rap about with this. I really have one friend who comes to mind who I don't see very often, but every time I see him, we have these great, intense, meaningful, spiritual, connected conversations where I feel I leave it feeling very fulfilled, but it doesn't happen very often. Most of my other friends who are men are very, you know, it's sort of like, how's work? Oh, it's good. What are you doing with the kids? They're good. Yeah. Did you watch that soccer game the other day? Yeah, it was awesome. You know, and that's where it sort of goes. So it's very hard to find that sort of that source to be vulnerable with. Mm-hmm.
And so even for men to be able to connect into emotion, right? Like, you are a human being, therefore you have emotions. And in fact, you are more of a feeling creature than you are a thinking creature, you know? But again, that would be another way that you would want to insult a man almost, right? So, you on your period, you're PMSing right. It. But I mean, if you can't allow a man to be in touch with emotion and feeling, I mean, you're not really letting him live.
Yeah. And so I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think, you know, one, we it's hard for us to connect with those feelings. The other thing I think also is that, you know, sort of like that, you're sort of alluding to like this sort of how men talk to men. And it is this sort of macho locker room talk. So for me, right, one of the things that I'm working on is being able to sort of call stuff out with my male friends when they say stuff like that, you know, and if a male friend of mine were to say something like that, I would say, you know, that's really misogynistic. You can't say that in front of me. Like, I find that really offensive that you would say that about a woman, even if a woman isn't there. But then again, that sort of starts this loop. Oh, well then, you know, I'm not going to say, you know, I can't have the locker room talk with Aaron. So it becomes, it's a really challenging thing for men in this society with masculinity and power to be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. But you know, even if, so say you set that boundary, and even if they're like, oh, you know, like, you're no fun, can't have locker room talk, that has got to make some type of an impact. Might not right away. It might kind of resurface somewhere else, you know, but to, you know, at some point that, I mean, and frankly, if nothing else, if it just makes you enjoy your relationship a little bit more, know that you're not going to participate in hurting other people, but yeah, that maybe there is some unseen good that you're doing by setting that boundary and by saying, you know, this is what I'm about.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, more commonly the boundary I need to set with men, and this goes back to what you were saying about the Whole 30 and the paleo and all those things, is I have to set a boundary about diet talk with my male friends and to sort of say, like, you know, I want to talk to you about the Dodgers or whatever else we might talk about, but I don't want to talk about the Whole 30 and I don't want to talk about the paleo thing that you're doing. Cause that's my boundary.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that people can pick up certain things like that are given to us by culture, and it's not necessarily hurting them on the surface, or they even think it's helpful. And it's like, when you have someone like that, well, there's not going to be an internal motivation to change anything anyway, because they don't see the problem, you know? So right. Yeah, your point would be, okay, well, if I'm feeling hurt, or if I, you know, if somebody's crossing a line, then the best I could do is set that boundary. I might not be bringing that person in line with my mindset or my philosophy, and maybe that's okay. But it's the people who come to us, or the people who do say, I'm having difficulty with something, you know, I'm struggling with something, that we're most likely to be able to open up their eyes and be able to provide some type of a help for. So in your practice, are you still getting people who like have a weight concern, or just kind of like, I'm sort of hoping the number, you know, I'm hoping to change my physique? And if so, what do you do in those situations?
The answer is yes. It's very common. So I live in LA, and yeah, this is a very image conscious part of the United States. So yes, a lot of people are coming to me, even though they know, and I'm very clear on my website about the way I work, they are still coming to me oftentimes with a desire to change their body. So it's interesting. I sort of would group it into two areas. I think I find there's a group of clients who come to me who already know some of this stuff, who already have been exposed to it either from a therapist or from a friend or from a loved one. And they have already maybe started some of the work, and they just need someone to help them navigate through it and to be that sort of perspective, to provide them perspective on things that are going on. And then there's this other group that are find me maybe online. They read my website and they're intrigued because it's very different than anything they've ever tried, but they haven't quite been formally exposed to a non-diet approach or a weight inclusive approach towards eating. So for those folks, that's usually where I get more of the, but will I lose weight with this? And my honest answer, I tell them, I said, I don't know. And I'm not going to promise that you will. Like, there's a chance you might gain weight. There's a chance you might stay the same, and there's a chance you might lose weight. And I am being sort of cavalier in that answer, because I want to frame it as I don't know. And I'm willing. And what I really encourage is that I want to talk about why they want to lose weight. I want to talk about why that becomes so important to them. And that might be a multiple session conversation. It might not just be, we can answer that in 5 minutes. It runs deep. And it runs deep because of the stigma that's associated with being in a larger body. And so that weight loss is could be sort of veiled as like the health concern, but it's really like, I'm just sick of being oppressed. I don't want people to treat me differently anymore. And so I want to fit in. I want to make my body fit into this narrative so I'm free from stigma.
It makes sense, right? It makes perfect sense, yes, that they're asking for this because they want, absolutely, some freedom from some pain.
So I try to normalize that, right? And again, this is a radical approach. This is completely different than the dominant narrative. So what I've realized in doing this is that I need to give space for people to butt up against it and to say, I don't necessarily buy that. So, you know, when that happens, I try to find other sources, like, okay, let's not just hear it from me. Let's maybe read some other article or listen to someone else say it. Because maybe the more we can get exposed to it, the more understanding. But also to understand, like, I didn't buy into this the first time I heard it. Like, the first time I heard all this, I was like, uh-huh, right, sure, whatever, you know? And it took my own sort of process to come to terms with it. So the first thing I tell people is that this is – my office is a safe space to talk about all of this, and that there's no judgment, and that there is no reciprocity, right, if you don't agree with me. But I want to be able to have a safe space for conversation. And where I will listen to you and I will hear you and I will be able to hopefully be a partner with you in doing some things better for yourself in the long term that are going to lead to some sort of deeper healing, not just about losing, 10 pounds.
Right. Exactly. Like there's and helping them find the bigger picture and the meaning that really does help them have a better life, including how changing their habits fit into that. And
absolutely.
And helping them process if they lose weight or if they don't, because either way, it's just a different way of acceptance, no matter what, it might take them some time to kind of come around to. Yeah. And no, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I do think that, especially in, so we're helping professionals who, align with the health at every size philosophy. And we don't have to market, hey, fatty, you should really lose some weight, or even not that literal, right? We don't have to market, want to lose weight, feel great. And that still comes out from dietitians. That the dominant narrative is still very much that weight loss is going to help you feel better. But we can say we want to help you have a better life. If you have weight concerns, it makes sense. I'm going to help you align with your intuitive eater, make choices that fit you best, that kind of a thing, change your habits. And they're still going to come, it would be rare for them to be like, I don't care if I don't lose a pound at all, because we are all kind of sitting in diet culture soup,
Yep. Yep.
And so it's kind of like part of that accepting of we're in here. And so it's okay. I love how you mentioned safety. It's okay to be able to express that these are truly thoughts and feelings that you have right now. Now let us talk about, what's underneath that and how, we can really improve your well-being. And then I think body image, I don't even know, I'm afraid to even say resolves, because I make it sound like that there's a guarantee that you'll never struggle with body image. And I have been long on my journey and I don't see that happening. I think that you get better to adapt, but it never really goes away, kind of a difficulty with body image.
No, absolutely. And to be honest, that's why I sort of am moving away from using the word body positive, because it's not always positive, and that's okay. Like, I think that's understandable that there are going to be days where we're not going to be so positive about our body. And to strive for positivity means, oh geez, I better be positive or I'm doing it wrong. And so, I think that's why I don't even like the word body neutral. I sort of like things that are talked about sort of being like just accepting. And I really like the word embodied. I think that just feels right, because whether it's a quote unquote good day or bad day, how you're feeling about your body, I just want everyone to feel comfortable in their body. And whether it's a good or bad day, right? So it's a bad day and you're at least embodied, you can understand why. You're comfortable to be in the space of your own body and to understand why it's maybe a bad day.
Mm-hmm. So, and to clarify that, being comfortable with discomfort if you're having a bad day. So permission to feel uncomfortable in your current body, if that's what you're experiencing, being able to bring that in the room and verbalize that, so in the present moment, I'm not comfortable, but overall, I am okay with letting myself feel what I'm going to feel without trying to suppress it or push it away, which would likely lead to self-sabotage or engagement in maybe disordered eating if the disordered eating is going on or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really like the term well-being. Like, I don't like healthy lifestyle. Like, that just to me is like code for diet. But I think well-being encompasses mind and body health. And to me, body health is not an appearance thing. You know, I think that that's a fair word, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's interesting how important language is with all these things. Uh-huh. And I think what we're realizing is that there's no like right word yet, you know, and we're playing around with what feels right. And I think that's important, right? I think we need to acknowledge, hey, that some of these words might be more challenging, but this is what's resonating right now. And I think that's great because we need to, we'll settle on something at some point.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is a good point too, like, no matter where you're at, no matter what size body, no matter how you feel about it, to know that you are in a place where you can contribute to body freedom and liberation by supporting that all bodies are good bodies, by not judging other people's appearance or your own, and really by, in whatever way you feel mentally possible in this moment, contributing to the fat acceptance movement, to the idea of it is not okay, kind of back to your earlier boundaries, like it's not okay to body shame another person.
Yeah.
Yes. Good.
Absolutely.
okay. So I want to transition our conversation a little bit to talk about families.
Sure.
We're both parents. So I've got two girls. Audrey is turning 5 and Isla is 3. So tell me about your family, whatever you're willing to share, and what it's like being a parent for you.
Yeah. So I have twins. They're 9 and a half. And, you know, it's been very interesting. What I realized very quickly after they were born is I did not like being a dad and a dietitian. Being a dad was great. Being a dietitian was great. But being a dad and a dietitian was really hard because I really had to examine my own food rules as they started to eat. And it was really hard for me to take a step back and examine those because I realized I was falling into traps where I was saying, you know, as they started to eat solids, right, is, oh, we shouldn't give them that. That might not be good for them. Or, you know, do we really want to give them this, you know, food, or, and why are we not making our baby food? And why, you know, why do we have to get it from a jar? And then this has this additive and this coloring and going down this rabbit hole. And so I really did have to be very conscious to sort of fall back onto what I learned with Ellen Satter and reading her books and that divisional responsibility and to allow my kids to become competent eaters. And thankfully, my partner, she is so, so great and willing to allow me the space to sort of try all these things. And she's on board with very similar messaging. And through this whole process, we have been very fortunate. We're incredibly lucky. Like, again, I think so many things can happen as kids get older. And we've just been so, so incredibly fortunate that nothing has. And we have had the space to really raise competent, intuitive eaters. And both kids who are 9 now are, I would say they are intuitive eaters. They eat a variety of foods. They know when they're full. They know when they're hungry. They trust that there will be regular meals. They trust that there will be snacks. They trust that mom and dad will support them. And they also trust that mom and dad are not going to shame them or force them to eat when they're not hungry. So it plays out in a lot of different ways, and it's always a little bit challenging. But basically, the things that I have found that have really worked is from an early age, invoking that divisional responsibility, allowing my kids to eat whatever's on their plate. And if it's just one food group, they just eat that one food group. And I'm not going to say anything that they're going to make up for it at some other time. And then I'm just going to let them learn to trust their own body. And, you know, it's really paid off. And I tell people, like, if you want to see that these things, intuitive eating, health at every size, Ellen Satter's divisional responsibility really work, put a camera in my house and watch my kids. You know, follow my kids around at school and watch them eat, because they embody all these things without even really knowing it. And, you know, they're getting to the age where, you know, especially my daughter, you know, fifth grade is around the research sort of showing where on average, a lot of girls start their first diet. So she's coming up on that, right? She's going into fourth grade next in the fall. And so we started to have some conversations around, you know, why someone, I think she asked us, like, why when she goes over to some kids' house, are they not allowed to have cookies? And at our house, we can have cookies whenever we want. And we sort of talked about, well, you know, some parents are concerned about the size of their child and they don't want them to eat too much of this food. And the question came, well, why do we have it out all the time? And I said, because we trust you, because we know that when you want a cookie, you'll have some cookies. And that if we have a bowl of cookies out, that you'll just have how many you ever need. You never abuse it. You never take the whole bowl of cookies into the bedroom and eat them all and hide it from us. You just sort of have a cookie and we're okay with you having a cookie. Like, for example, we're recording this in June, right? They still have Halloween candy in their bedroom.
We just threw ours away because we found ants in the suckers finally.
Right. So we thankfully there's no ants, because I think my wife would probably ask us to move if she found ants in the house. But no, they still have Halloween candy in their bedroom. Like, it's in their room. They never like sneak out of bed in the middle of the night to eat it. They eat it sporadically, you know, but we just let them have it. Like, we trust that they know how to regulate all these things, and they do it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so true. I think that it's so important to make sure that, and even if we still feel like we have work to do, that we model the type of behaviors that we're trying to strive for with our kids, you know, because they're sponges. They're going to learn it all. And, you know, even if, you know, we're still dealing with a body image issue or something like that, to think about the ways that putting rigidity within our family may actually be harmful. So I've definitely had the clients or a friend text me, oh my gosh, my daughter's eating brownies under the kitchen table. And it turned into this whole conversation about, well, how often are sweets offered? And it turns out that, you know, fear and anxiety around not just body, but like too much sugar and the rules and this and that led to a rigidity that just in, you know, the poor kid's mind meant that if I have an opportunity, I better take advantage of it. And it's not rational. They're not thinking rationally, but they also don't have that part of their brain fully developed yet. Right. And if anything, the experience you're giving them is you don't get full access to this. And so it contributes to this reflexive or rebellious type of reaction that then, if a parent isn't careful, can turn into justification of, oh, and see, this is why I shouldn't have this stuff around. But the mistake is very much with the parent and the rules in the first place.
Absolutely. And you know, the other thing about modeling, you know, you brought up is that we've made a very conscious effort of when our kids were born was, we're not going to have any negative body talk in our house. And my wife and I have done we were on board with that. And the hardest part was getting some of our family involved, right? We had family come over and the kids were like maybe 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. They didn't understand what was going on yet, but we had to train them from that age, the adults from that age, that we don't want any negative body talk in our house. You know, so when you are saying, oh, I was so bad today, or I feel so fat, or I feel so gross, or I got to lose 10 pounds to do whatever. I'm like, we don't talk about that in our house. Like, this is not something that we want to model for our kids, you know? So we've done a lot of conscious things. We don't have a scale in our house. We don't, you know, if the word fat comes up, we talk about what that word means and that, you know, it's just a descriptor. It doesn't need to mean something that's negative. And, you know, just because daddy is, you know, and I'll say it, just because daddy's fat doesn't mean I can't do all the things that I any other dad would do with you. It doesn't make me any less of a dad. And, you know, it just means that I'm a little bit bigger and I'm okay with that. It doesn't stop me from anything or connecting with you on any level.
Mm-hmm. That's so important. I mean, this is an area where I can see the power in reclaiming the term fat to be a description, like we have body fat and then people are fat, but that it's not being used in a way to try to cause somebody harm.
Right.
But I, you know, culturally, right, and we're talking about kids, you know, in the schools, right, kids in larger bodies are teased by their peers and their own family members. You know,
absolutely.
So it's a thing to do to shame, which is not only is it unhelpful, but it, you know, it could lead to, I mean, could, using that loosely, it's like, duh, right? But poor body image, which could lead to eating disorders, depression, anxiety, just, you know, it growing up is hard enough, you know, so conditionally supporting kids based on size or appearance doesn't do anything to leave the planet in a better place. And I think it goes for no matter what size the parents are, no matter what size the kids are, teaching that we do not disparage people based on their looks or size or any other criteria. We don't judge and we don't disparage. And if we can do more to, I actually think it involves also teaching more self-acceptance.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of times the kids who struggle with the bullying are kids who are dealing with their own issues themselves. And if we could teach people in, you know, conventionally ideal looking bodies, not, you know, to understand this and to not to tease and not to bully, they're going to be better for it in their own well-being. And they're going to stop contributing to body oppression and weight stigma, and which is truly harmful.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we're just sort of in our certification that I mentioned earlier that we're learning about is adverse childhood experiences. And it was a whole study, I think 1998. And they sort of looked at how adverse childhood events, they called them ACEs, affected health later in life, like chronic health conditions. And the more adverse childhood events you have, the more negative effects it was going to have in adulthood, not just depression and anxiety, but other, again, chronic health conditions. So again, framing weight as and the stigma of weight as that bullying as an adverse childhood experience, you know, sort of puts all the context into, of course, why this person might be struggling in adulthood. So there's one other modeling thing I just wanted to come back to,
sure.
If that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because with regards to my son, the thing that I, as a dad, model for him is vulnerability. And I admit there are times where he pushes my buttons, I push his, and we fight, you know, and I get
father,
angry.
I'm the father, listen to me.
Right. But I think what I've learned in my own experience is to come back and to him later. And to say, listen, I was not at my best right there. You know, I'm really sorry that I did this. And I am trying to do that better next time. And I know that me acting this way might have made you feel something. And if you want to share that with me, you can. And just to let you know, like, I want to hear you and that I did this incorrectly. I'm not happy with how I did it. And I'm trying to do better.
Yeah. That's so important because you're modeling an apology. You are modeling that it's okay to make mistakes, that you can be human. And when you know, that's going to be teaching resilience and self-compassion, which then is going to put him in a better place to be able to do that himself. You know, which certainly just helps in relationship and conflict resolution and dealing with life stresses, like so many things, even outside of our appearance. But again, very much a part of our health when health is just not looked at as, you know, what you see in the mirror, and very
Absolutely.
Much a part of our good, our healthy well-being too.
Yep. 100%.
Okay. So yeah, so this has been a great conversation. I just kind of want to recap for you, I think, a few of the key takeaways that, you know, we know men struggle with body image. We can't really trust the stats if there are even there, because we know that this is an area where men would be more likely to avoid. They might not even know they're struggling, but they'll be more likely to avoid because power that men are supposed to have, and you know, you're not supposed to have any problems, so you're not even reaching out to talk to people. And really, in many cases, that criteria could lead a person to deal with anxiety, depression, possibly eating disorders, right? Especially if you're dieting or just using food as a way to cope with not being able to feel emotion. You know, we know that men, we didn't bring this up yet, but so I'm adding it here, but like binge eating disorder is the most common eating disorder, and more men struggle than women. So clearly, you know, men are not immune to food and body issues, and it does a disservice for everybody, men and women, to tell ourselves that they're not immune or to ignore the male need, right? And then we talked about that, you know, really we can all be more liberated if we acknowledge where body image issues come from, you know, culturally conditioned or family and peers and all through the messages throughout our lives. But if you're a man or you have a partner who you have concerns about, that kind of identifying that it makes sense that you would be right where you're at, and to seek the help of somebody who can guide you on your path to a better well-being, eating disorder or not, you know, just somebody that can help you understand about respecting your body, intuitive eating, working on self-compassion rather than judging yourself or others, that, you know, it's kind of, you look for areas to start to make, your body image problem is not going to go away, but you look for areas to start to make progress and peel away the layers. And, you know, if you've already got kids and you're worried about it, like, you do the best you can for today, but it's even more motivation for to keep working on this vision you have for yourself and your well-being, because absolutely you are in a position to really shape and help your children become more resilient and kind and loving out to other people in the world and to themselves as well.
I would agree 100%.
Any other words of advice for guys who are just sitting with it and kind of hesitant to take action, afraid of being judged, or just afraid? Like, what would you say to them to kind of boost the likelihood that they would maybe kind of take a look at some of this stuff?
What I would say is that there are other men struggling with this, that you are not alone, and that the, you know, what Brené Brown talks about is that shame can't live in isolation, and is that when we build that connection with each other, that's where healing can happen, especially in this area. So I would say, do the bravest thing in your life and reach out to talk to someone about it, or to get help, or even just communicate with that friend that you think might be able to understand it, and start that conversation. Because I think when men do connect on this issue, I think there's a lot of healing that can happen. And one of the things I'm thinking about is, and we'll see if I can launch this, but I'm thinking I want to have 100 conversations with men about their bodies.
Ooh, and I like that. Is that going to be a little project of yours or something?
It's going to be, I'm going to try and figure out how, like, I can do this. But, like, I want to be that. And again, it's not therapy, right? I just want to hear what men have to say about body image. And maybe that is a way to connect with people also. So keep track of my website, bvmrd.com, and maybe I'll be launching that very soon.
Oh, that's so awesome. That sounds exciting. I encourage you to do that. And I will include your website and other social ways of finding you in the show notes. And I love your podcast. That's so great. So I highly recommend that. I'll include the link to Dietitians Unplugged as well. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you, Rebecca. I really, this is the best hour I've spent so far. So thank you so much.
Oh, you just made my day. And that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. I would love if you could take a minute and leave a rating and review on iTunes. I know they don't make it very easy, so I have a few quick tips for you. First, launch the Apple Podcast app, and then you're going to click the search button to enter the name Body Kindness, and you'll find my podcast. You'll see the album art. And when you click on the album art, there is going to be a button in the middle at the top. It's called Reviews. Click that. And then when you scroll to the bottom, you will see an option to leave a review. And so you'll click that button and go ahead and write your thoughts. I also would love ideas for future episodes. You can email me, Rebecca@bodykindnessbook.com. Again, that's Rebecca@bodykindnessbook.com. I love chatting about the show and how it's helpful. And so keep those emails coming. And also, if you are not yet completed with the e-course, don't forget that's a free resource for anyone who's interested in practicing body kindness. If you visit bodykindnessbook.com and click on Get Started, just enter in your name and email and you'll get instant access. I'll see you there.